You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Police shootings and the death of others in police custody have been in the news a lot in the past few years. Some, like Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri almost a year ago, and Tony Robinson in Madison earlier this year, sparked protests and widespread media attention. Others have gone unnoticed and uncounted, and reliable numbers have been almost non-existent. Our next guest is part of an effort to find those numbers. Oliver Lachlan is a senior reporter for Guardian U.S. and a member of the reporting team on The Counted, an interactive investigative project documenting police killings in the United States. Oliver, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So why did The Guardian tackle this project?
Well, I think it really comes down to what you just mentioned in your intro there. There are no official statistics out there that accurately reflect the number of people that are killed by police in the United States each year. So, it was our thought that obviously it's an ambitious project, but we thought that there's enough public merit in trying to do something like this. So that's where the project started, really.
And what have you found? Big picture, what kind of numbers do you see out there?
Well, so the project's only been going since the beginning of 2015. We launched in June, and that's obviously with a backlog of data that we've been looking at for a few months. The total we've got at the moment as of this afternoon, so it's a live database that we update twice, three times, sometimes four times a day. We've got 584 deaths so far this year. Now, that's not just shootings. That's deaths in custody like that in Baltimore with Freddie Gray. That's deaths after people have been tased by police, and that's also deaths that have involved collisions with police vehicles. So it's obviously quite a striking number, especially when you, I suppose, compare it to other countries around the world. So that's what we've got so far. The idea is to keep going for the entire year and see what results we get at the end.
And we'll break down those numbers more in a little bit. But first, talk about how you find this information, given that there's no centralized federal clearinghouse for this information. States, cities, all vary in how they handle this. So how are you digging this up?
Well, so there's a variety of methods that we have. A lot of it is to do with local media reporting. So whilst you're right, yeah, there is you know, the way in which records are kept varies from state to state, jurisdiction to jurisdiction, city to city. Local media do report on these deaths. Often they're not very long reports. They can be, you know, a couple of paragraphs where bare bones of a story, I suppose, is laid out. So we try and keep abreast of all of that. We use public records. We interact with police forces when we hear that something might have happened. And a big, big part of this is through our audience. So the moment we launched, the idea was that this was going to be partly crowdsourced. So we're very, very open about this. We want people to email us in when they hear something, even if it's just an update in a case that we've already written about. So there are lots and lots of different ways, some of which are, I suppose, what you call traditional journalistic methods, you know, hitting the phones, making public record requests, that sort of stuff, and others are more sort of, you know, 21st century practice, relying on the internet.
And these crowdsourced ones, then you try to confirm before you add them to the count?
Of course. So every single incident that is included in the counted database has been gone over by a reporter here. You know, often that means putting in calls after we've had a tip-off from somebody online. You know, everything that's in there is manually inputted in. So we will write the descriptions, which are often based primarily on a police department's account of what transpired. We try and source photographs. And one of the key things that we're really trying to do is track the status of the investigation that arises into the death. So that means often, you know, going back to a case three, four, five times, as much as it needs to be until we see it through to completion.
And so what are the parameters of how you decide whether to count someone as killed by police or law enforcement agencies or a report that doesn't meet the standards of this count?
Well, it's pretty straightforward, really. You know, there's got to be some level of responsibility leveled at a law enforcement agency. Now, there are other crowdsourced accounts out there that are run by people online that tend to count, you know, as well as the stuff that we're counting, will count things like somebody who died while they were, you know, in a car chase with police and had crashed their vehicle. Now, for us, that doesn't necessarily count. What we're counting are basically those categories that I gave you a little bit earlier. So those people that have been shot by the police, people who have died after they've been tased by the police, people who have died in police custody, and that's following an altercation in police custody, most usually, and those that have been struck by a vehicle.
Talking to Oliver Lachlan, he's with Guardian US, and he's a member of the team on a project called The Counted, trying to put a number on police-involved killings in the United States. Now, there isn't a value judgment here. You share information about each of the cases you count and describe the circumstances. Some might be an active firefight with a suspect or somebody in the process of a murder. These aren't necessarily all unjustifiable police-involved killings.
Of course. I mean, the point of the project really is not to necessarily cast aspersions on each one of the incidents. We make no qualms in saying that, you know, there are lots of people included in that database that, to many people, you know, may have been engaging in criminal activity at the time they were killed by police, may have fired on officers themselves. One of the guys that escaped from the prison in New York and was subsequently shot dead by law enforcement in New York State is in that database because, you know, it comes down again to the fact that there is no reliable data out there at the moment. So our premise is basically we count everybody irrespective of whether the incident was justifiable or not, and we're not making judgments on that.
And you try to determine the people who die in these cases, whether they were armed or unarmed, and you have a racial breakdown there too. What kind of things did you find out?
Well, yeah, so obviously, you know, as well as trying to provide this impartial resource, it obviously comes off the back of an ongoing national discussion, really, about policing practice around the United States, and a lot of that discussion is weighted towards dynamics of race, and that's obviously arising from what happened in Ferguson. It's what's happened recently in Madison, Wisconsin as well, in Baltimore, etc. So, you know, we're collecting about 16 different data points, one of which is ethnicity, and another of which is whether the person who died was armed or unarmed. And, you know, when we collect bits of data like that, it allows us to stratify, it allows us to look at you know, things like whether there's a racial disparity between people who are unarmed and killed. And so what we found is that basically black Americans are twice as likely to be killed unarmed as white Americans. About 30% of deaths have occurred where the person who died was black have been unarmed, whereas about 16% have been unarmed and white.
In reporting related to the Counted project, you looked at standards for the use of lethal force among police agencies. You found that most states, I think all states, didn't meet international standards for use of lethal force by police officers.
So that actually wasn't our analysis. That's an analysis that was done by Amnesty International, and they went back and looked at laws on the books in all 50 states and the District of Columbia and compared that with guidelines that are set out by the United Nations and came to that conclusion that in every single state, guidelines that are available to law enforcement officers on the use of lethal force fall below international standards, which basically has at the heart of it the preservation of life and the idea that the use of lethal force should be an absolute last resort.
Now, you were in Madison to cover the Tony Robinson shooting that you mentioned back in March. You've been following that story since yesterday, or earlier this week was the four-month anniversary. Share your perspective on that shooting and how it fits into this wider project you're doing.
Well, yeah, so the Tony Robinson case is an interesting one. I've been covering it before the Counted was launched, but Tony's case does sort of seem to fit in with one of the trends that we've identified. Obviously, he was a young man of colour. He was biracial, but in our database, we've identified him as black because we believe that's how the police would have defined him at the moment of the incident occurred. Now, he was an unarmed black man, and as we've just discussed, you know, his case falls into this disparity that we've identified of unarmed black people being more likely to be shot. So, I mean, that's one aspect of it. I mean, the other aspect, of course, is that cases like Tony's, which were obviously huge news in Wisconsin, but may not have been, you know, covered throughout the United States as much. You know, keeping databases like this allows us to identify cases that are less prominent and perhaps warrant a bit more interrogation. So I suppose his death sort of fits in along those lines as well.
Now, an interesting aspect of the coverage of the online project you're doing is that you aren't just collecting the numbers, you're sharing the names, a brief summary of the circumstances of the person's death, and then links to more information to reporting by other sources on those shootings. Why was it important to do that?
Well, I think, you know, what happens, and I suppose it's a journalistic tool, really. You know, the idea is that the database is very interactive. You know, we've got readers at the heart of it, and I think we want people to be able to read a bit more about what happens in some of these cases that aren't documented. And, you know, as we touched on before, a lot of the cases are involving people that have been accused of criminality, whatever it is, just before they died. But I think, as a sort of resource for readers, the way, you know, if we're able to make it feel more human, allow people to filter the data as much as they can, see photographs of people, hear a little bit about, you know, what happened in the last moments of their lives, we feel like that's a more engaging and interesting experience for a reader who's perhaps trying to, you know, search out some of the stories behind the data just as much as the data itself.
And Oliver, before we let you go, have you gotten response from the people involved in law enforcement, from local police departments on up to the Department of Justice on your project?
Well, the project itself was welcomed by a number of members of Barack Obama's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, which is obviously a commission that he brought into being after what happened in Ferguson. And they were very happy about it. You know, one of the big calls arising from the movement in Ferguson and in other cities where there's been, perceived police impunity is that these records should be kept. So, you know, that's been fantastic for us. And one of the other things that we did was we spoke to relatives of people who had died at the hands of police, including Tony Robinson's mum, who was really happy to see that we were doing something like this. In terms of how it's been received by local law enforcement agencies, I mean, there are 18,000 police departments around the United States, and so it's really very difficult for us to generalize and say how it's been received across the country. I mean, I think a really interesting point to think about, though, is that this is really a kind of a consensus view in Washington. Both the president and the previous Attorney General, Eric Holder, have said that these records should be kept. So from our point of view, you know, we agree with those calls, and we don't necessarily think that what we're doing is particularly controversial or political in itself. We think it's, an important piece of public interest journalism.
Oliver, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
That's Oliver Lachlan. He's a senior reporter for Guardian US, a member of the reporting team on The Counted, an interactive investigative project documenting police-related killings in the United States. Coming up, we talk with WPR criminal justice reporter Gilman Halstead about efforts to track gun violence here in Wisconsin. First, a look at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Before the news break, we heard about the Guardian newspaper's U.S. Bureau working to count deaths related to police-involved shootings, tasings, deaths in police custody around the United States, trying to put a number on that. Joining us now is Gilman Halstead, WPR's criminal justice reporter. Gil, thanks for stopping by.
Nice to be here.
Well, let's start. I want to get to a project you've been working on here in Wisconsin, but first, related to police-involved deaths, how do we track these? How does the state track these here in Wisconsin?
Well, since the law was passed last year, last April, requiring independent investigations, the majority of those, or I think close to a majority of the ones that we've had since then, have been investigated by the Department of Criminal Investigation and the State Department, because except for Milwaukee and Madison, but even in Madison, the most recent one that we had was the investigation was handled by the state DOJ. You were just talking about that before, Tony Robinson's case. You can follow those. They're being tracked, and the documents are being maintained on the Department of Justice website. There's been four so far this year that I'm aware of, and they have produced reports on three of them. There's one in Kenosha that I was just looking to see if I could find any information about. I think that was the most recent one that the investigation has not been complete yet. So you can see all of that information. And from my perspective as a journalist, they're doing a pretty good job of releasing a really comprehensive set of information about what happened. The concerns that have been raised and that I think continue to be raised across the country, is even when you have these independent investigations, to what extent does sort of police blue wall of silence wall of loyalty that has always been the case for some understandable reasons, whether law enforcement people are really going to be objective and unbiased in all the reporting they're doing, because to get the experience to do the investigation, you pretty much have to have been a police officer, and that raises concerns among the families of the victims and other reform advocates trying to see if they can get it even more unbiased. When we passed the law here, there was an effort to make it to require another level of investigation or of clearance, and that did not make it into the law, to have a non-police people who were totally not involved in the process actually review it and then make a recommendation.
Now, this Guardian Project was trying to put a count on, if they can, every police-related death in the U.S. I want to turn now to a project you tackled last year, trying to count the number of gun-related homicides involving a shooting here in Wisconsin. What led you and your colleagues to kick that effort off?
Well, I have to give credit to Chuck Kornbach. I mean, the way he viewed this was a way to inform the debate over gun control and gun rights with some numbers that a lot of them are floating out there all the time on different sides of this. And we decided to focus on one of those, which were actual gun homicides, what Chuck called the sort of slow-moving mass murder. And to try to track that slow process death by death as it went on. It was difficult for just two reporters to do this and really get a lot of the information about each of those deaths. We had to track the daily reports from other news agencies, local news agencies around the state. But of course, most of them happened in Milwaukee, so we needed to develop a good relationship with the Public Affairs Office of the Milwaukee Police Department and try to get as much information from them as we could. And I think it worked out. We were able to keep track, and now we have something to compare it to as we report maybe on more individual ones as we go on this year. Of course, it's rather depressing that we're already very close to what the total in Milwaukee was last year, and we've still got almost half the year left. So I certainly can't say that our reporting had an impact on the people who were doing the shooting.
What was the tally? What was the toll last year?
The toll last year statewide was 114 gun homicides. It was actually a somewhat larger total of around 128, but we focused on ones that were actual quote-unquote homicides. And when we were doing the count, we also included some suicides and, I believe, six what were ruled self-defense murders.
So you removed those from the overall
We removed
tally.
Those from the total, but we still counted them overall. And then when our report was 114. And so, so far this year in Milwaukee, I think there have been 77. And last year there were 86. So
86 for the whole year last year.
The whole year.
77 so far this year.
Right.
Sad news.
Yes, it is sad news. And there are an increasing number of young people being killed. I think we've already reached the same total as last year for people under 18 have already been shot. There have been five teens or younger shot this year.
So as I understand it, you're not doing the same count death by death, but how does that, having that number last year, how does that inform reporting here in the state on these issues this year, do you think?
Well, I think it gives us the opportunity to measure the effectiveness of policing and efforts to actually reduce the gun homicides. I mean, we just reported on Chief Flynn being reappointed, even at a time when the gun deaths are rising, and he now feels, I think partly because of all the reporting that's been going on, a commitment to say, well, I guess we're still not doing everything we need to do, so we're going to try to increase the neighborhood policing and community policing and efforts to get those guns off the street.
All right, Gilman, thanks for coming by and sharing your reporting, as always. That was Gilman Halstead, Wisconsin Public Radio's criminal justice reporter.